What's happening, guys? We're back from New York City here to talk about one of the favorite films of one of the most important action fans ever to live. Today, it's Sudden Death. We'll see you guys in a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
It was there. I heard it.
It's kind of still playing in the background. I'm not really sure what's going on.
I don't know what's happening.
So explosive. The explosion could not be contained. Nor can our excitement for this fucking sweet film.
This movie is the definition of the movies that we started the show, that we based the show off of.
100%. That's what this movie is. And Kernsy, right off the bat, I'm just going to tell you, that's Matt Kearns, by the way, who runs the Twitter for Action Industries. I loved this movie. I thought this movie was terrific.
I really did. And we were both very skeptical. We both thought it was going to be pretty bad. But it was awesome. And Ryan, I actually just sent you an email. If you could email me back very quickly, it's a phone number for the studio. Because I think I want Kearns to call in. I know that he's going to be watching. I know that he's ready. He's been asking for this movie for 4 years.
That's a real
four
thing.
4 years.
4 years he's been asking. And everyone, that's Ryan Nielsen up in the booth. Ryan, how you doing today?
Shout out to you guys. I'm doing great. I'm excited to hear about Sudden Death.
Sudden Death. This is one of the 90s Die Hard clones that happened. Yep. There was a whole series of, there's a decade of movies where they're just ripped off Die Hard. And some of them do it shamelessly. This one's very shameless.
Yeah.
But it's a sweet premise. It's not like when you, like, the guy that invented the sandwich, every sandwich after that has to suck because somebody else invented the sandwich.
You can't have a sandwich. I made the sandwich. Yeah, no, I agree. I think, I mean, there's a reason why this formula worked and was tried and tested over and over and over again. You've got Under Siege. You've got Die Hard. You've got Air Force One. You've got
Olympus
Sudden
Has
Death.
Fallen.
You've got Olympus Has Fallen. Like, the list goes on and on and on. So I'm going to send this number over to Kearns, Ben, if you want to intro the show.
Yeah, so guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy here on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies, all things movie related, and pop culture by the bucketful. We talk action movies on this show, and I am Ben Bateman. That is Andrew Guy.
That was good. That was real good. That was right down the barrel. Guys, I'd like you to practice that at home. It's not as easy to say as you'd think it is.
Yeah.
I always get nervous when I have to do it.
And still, then when you stutter in the middle of it, when you trip up.
All things action.
It's embarrassing.
It really is.
I've seen you do it.
I've seen you do it.
So, guys, if you want to follow along with what we're doing here on the show, you can follow me personally at Ben Bateman Media. That is Andrew Guy. You can find him at Andrew Guy. And, of course, our brand, our personal brand, the one that was born of this show, is called Action Industries.
Yep.
You can find at Action Industries everywhere, but specifically the Twitter for this is at Team Action Show. It was the very first piece of social media the show ever had. So, Team Action Show, Kearnsy, Matt Kearns,
yeah,
one of our best fans in the whole world, runs that Twitter, so you can go and interact with him, tell him how sweet you thought this movie was.
Yeah, we got to hang out with him in New York this last week. New York was absolutely incredible. It was really nice to take last Monday off.
Yeah.
But we just had an amazing live show. We got Will Forte to call in. I mean, not call in. He made us a video as MacGruber, which you guys will be getting eventually. We're in the process of editing it all together.
I think that's going to bring it. I'll bet you it goes up today or tomorrow on our personal YouTube, which is Akin Industries. But it was an unbelievable experience. New York was so much fun. We've talked about it at length on some of our live streams we've done. You'll hear about it a little more today on the show. You'll hear about it some more on the Action Guys as well. And we are going to get into today's show. So coming up, I wanted to give a quick shout out to two new patrons. We got Fresh Prince and The Germinator. We salute you.
And of course, a brand new shout out to a general. We'll obviously get there at the end of the show, but we also like to shout him out at the very beginning. Sadi Lamanmaki, you guys all know her. You all love her. She's incredible. Yeah, she was just in New York. She travels all over the world to go to Schmodown events and Action events. So to have you now as a general, Saudi, is incredible. So thank you so much. If you guys want to become a general, patreon.com/teamaction.
It's the highest level. It's the highest level of service you can give to this action country.
I think legend is more appropriate. Is that what he says?
Holy, this man is a hero. I think legend is more appropriate. it's the best ever. It's from The Rock. All right, so guys, this film is Sudden Death. And I think we just kind of, look at that. It's a Patreon right there on the screen.
Wow. It's amazing having Ryan up in the booth. Not that other people haven't done great jobs, but Ryan goes above and beyond. I love it. I really do. No, man, seriously, it means so much to us. So let's get into the rules, because I think that this movie
fits the rules.
Is the definition of the rules.
Well, yeah, when we started the show back in 2015, there was a lot of discussions about the movies. Like when Drew and I sat down, we sat down together. Hey, John, how you doing?
Should we talk about this?
Every time I cut to Ben, John looks in the corner of the frame, just aiming at his mic.
Yeah, I mean, we just shouted out the general, so we'll get there in a half a second, but I do want you to finish your thought on us sitting down at Nonstop Sushi in Santa Monica.
Drew and I, back in 2015, back when we concepted this show in that first 6 months, we spent a lot of hours at this all-you-can-eat sushi joint in Santa Monica called Nonstop Sushi.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that B-level all-you-can-eat, where it's like, you don't get sick, it's all pretty tasty, but about 80% of the meal, you're like, this is gross. Look at that. Right there.
That is the most promotion they've ever gotten their whole entire existence.
And Drew and I would go and eat like an absurd amount of, like an offensive amount of sushi.
We'd order and they'd be like, you know, you get two pieces for each order. Like, yeah, we know. We want 24 pieces of salmon
now. We'd get 30 pieces of salmon. I mean, we'd make ourselves sick.
Every time.
And that's where we concepted most of this show. And I just remember making the list of all the things. It was like, all right, you know, what are like the commonalities between this list of 50 movies that we love? Like all these movies, you know, Under Siege and Point Break and Predator and Die Hard. And at the time, we had both seen a lot of them, but we both hadn't seen all of them.
Yeah.
So there was stuff that we were still just kind of going. And like, so those rules we came up with back in the day.
And there's ones that didn't make the list, like Red Dot Silencers and C4. There was like gratuitous nudity.
Had to be made after 1981.
Yeah, there was some that didn't quite make the cut, but these four are what we stuck with.
Yeah, rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. And I would say definitely, you know?
Yeah.
He's, what's his name in the movie?
Jean-Claude Van Damme. Honestly, I can't remember his name. I remember Joshua's.
He's so much more relevant than Powers Booth in this movie.
Powers Booth is the main character of this movie.
100%. Yeah, no question.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Okay, so...
rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people, being things, dinosaurs in the room. Well, Powers Booth is both the hero and the villain. He's smarter than Jean-Claude, so... No, but I mean, he and Jean-Claude are the smartest guys in the movie.
Definitely. The fact that Jean-Claude is able to survive as long as he does in that place, just as a lowly fireman with high kicks...
I spent 20 minutes this morning just talking out loud in Jean-Claude voice and making myself laugh. Every time I'd be like doing something, I'd like walk in, just because the way that he walks into rooms in this movie, he's like not even talking, and we're like, God, he's a bad actor. I'd walk into the room and be like walking to the gym this morning. I was like, ah, look at all these weights. These are so difficult to lift.
They're
like,
so heavy.
These are such heavy weights. It's like kind of Schwarzenegger, but
more French.
Yeah, exactly.
He has a French moment in the movie. He speaks
French to the other player. So, yeah, he's French Canadian.
Like, we're gonna fuck him up. He's like, he said nothing.
Anyway, so rule number two, hero and the villain are always the smartest people, being things, dinosaurs in the room. Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure. I mean, yeah, he was a fireman. Now he's a fire marshal.
Ooh.
Right?
Because he's too scared to get back out in the field. This movie was oddly dark.
Very dark. Yeah, there was a lot of death. We got something here.
Yeah, is that the name that would be calling out?
That is no. That is actually Jean-Claude's character name.
Oh, Darren McCord.
There we go.
God, I'm pretty sure they didn't say that once.
Darren McCord. I don't think he's ever called that.
He looks like a Darren McCord.
Is he ever called that?
They've got to say like McCord.
Yeah, they do when they figure out who he is in the Die Hard moment.
Right. The Die Hard. We got to watch out for this guy.
Yeah, Darren McCord. Who is this guy? Rule number four: the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. Definitely, there's a bunch of explosions in this movie. There's some sweet slow mo ones. So those are the rules of action movie anatomy, and that's kind of what would pick the movies we did. And this movie definitely feels like the movies we would have done back then.
Yeah, this is like the truest of form of the show,
right down the middle. It's funny to me. It's actually funny to me that neither of us had ever seen it.
I know,
or that like. I mean, basically, Kernsey's the only person I've ever met that like really hammered home how much I needed to see this movie.
I've never talked to a person that's seen this movie in my life.
Anytime I've ever brought it up, like people in the Schmodown community, especially the guys, the older guys,
that's true.
You know, Christian and Mark and all those guys, they've all seen this movie because this is their era. It's 95 too, so like Die Hard's 88. Like this is, by the time this came out, all those guys were the right age.
I just don't understand how I missed this movie growing up. My mom was a gigantic Jean-Claude fan, and I was as well.
We were 7 when this came out. This was on cable when we were 10 years old.
And like, we said all the other movies, right? Like every other movie that he's been in, you and I have seen watched time after time. Somehow this one just missed. And I think, honestly, this one just missed in general to the public.
I agree. And there's a bunch of different reasons why, I think, that we'll kind of get into as the episode goes on. So we're going to jump into the very first part of the show here, which is called Thesis Statement. But before we do, I want to remind, so we have the phone number for Kernsey to be on. Is Weeks Kernsey in the chat?
Yeah, I messaged it to Kernsey. He's going to call in around fist pump moment.
Okay, terrific. So I just want to give a quick shout out to my boy, John, here.
Yeah. This is from Jake Iacovetta.
Jake Iacovetta and Eric Frederick.
Yeah, they
got this
out
for us as a gift when they were in New York last week, hanging out, getting ready to go to the action show, and they saw it at a comic book store, and they were like, these guys have to have this.
And we do it. They said it was the coolest, biggest thing that they saw that was the most perfect for the show. Now, it was a little bit interesting getting it back over to California.
Did you have to take a box off and just kind of pack it in clothes, as you did?
Yeah, well, so... Ashley's gonna love this. My girlfriend, I hate her JanSport backpack.
Yeah,
I think it's like she needs to get a new one. It looks like she's 12, and it's really dirty. She's like, it was the only thing that would carry this perfectly, completely unassisted.
Unadulterated.
I was gonna say unadulterated, but it was in the bag by itself, perfectly traveled well. It was the only place it would fit. Wouldn't fit in my carry-on, fit in my check bag.
Did she make you carry the JanSport backpack?
She won't let me carry the JanSport, but she made me acknowledge how helpful it was numerous times. And it was. So thank you, Jake and Eric. And of course, another general, Tamor Buda?
Buda, yeah. Buda. Maybe.
He got us Suntory whiskey, as you guys all know. We love Japanese whiskey.
Weren't there two bottles?
No.
Oh, I thought you said there was another bottle.
I got confused saying that because it had changed hands numerous times.
Ah, okay.
So I thought that it was like, I thought Kelsey had also gotten one, but she was just holding it because he was already gone.
I see.
And then, yeah, so this is, there were three bottles.
oh, the Mac 12 was from, that was from.
That was from before.
Detenchi.
Yeah, that was from Ryan Angel, Detenchi. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so
much whiskey.
So guys, much great whiskey.
You guys know, if you key to our hearts, if you want to show your appreciation, just send us something to keep the alcoholism rolling.
Just super chat and send us whiskey, and that's all we need in our lives. But yeah, so let's get into Thesis Statement, because I'm pretty curious about this, because these movies are always... It feels almost silly to make like a hard and fast like thesis statement, one that you would actually really talk. Guys, thesis statement's that thing. It's your biggest, boldest thought about the movie that we are discussing at hand. If you were at a party, a sudden death party, it would be incredible.
Not only
would I wish I was there, but it would be the one thing that you said, drop the mic, peace out, grab a bottle of Suntory on the way.
If this movie had been made with any dramatic actor in the 90s, it would have been a classic in the Jean-Claude role. Is what I mean to say. Any of them. Any A-list dramatic actor in the 90s in the Jean-Claude role, and this movie's a classic.
100%.
The only reason it's not is because Jean-Claude's the star. I honestly think Joshua Foss, the Powers Booth character, is the best character in the movie. Like, I don't think you have to argue that. I think like, anybody watching this movie can just tell.
Yeah.
But I think that if you were to have, like, Mel Gibson, or if you had Nick Cage... God, how sweet would this movie have been if Nick Cage was in the role?
That'd be so sick.
In 95, like... even if you put like Michael Douglas, like any, like,
there's just a little girl in the fire. Yeah.
You put Michael Douglas, you put like, there are so many guys in the 90s, even B level guys in the 90s. Totally. Those guys probably saw the script and passed on it at some point. Yeah, 95, that would have been a good
Swayze. But he has another, doesn't he have another hockey movie?
Swayze?
Does he not?
He's called Youngblood, but that's like a sports movie.
Right, action movie. Yeah.
It's just something about the fact that he's not American, he's not a very good actor, and it's, he's like, this is not really, he's not believable as like a fire marshal with kids. He's like, he just, none of those things play for me.
Yeah, like, you, not for one second do you believe that he's a fire marshal. Do you believe that the kids are his? Do you believe that he's doing anything other than just trying to look awesome as Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yeah.
Which is why, and someone else in the chat already agreed, they're like, he does have a very distinct walk. And I know that seems crazy, but like, literally the first thing that Ben says after the fire, the next scene or whatever, when you see him walking up to the house with the kids, you're like, God, he's a bad actor. And I was like, you're so right. And he hasn't said a goddamn word
yet. He's he's just kind of jaunting into the scene the way that he walks, and you're like, God, stop it.
Yeah. You're going to pick up your kids from your ex-wife on their birthday as a surprise. You know you're going to get into some shit. Like, and sell it.
And like, the sweetest part about it is like all the conventions, all the cliches are there. He shows up and you're like, That's obviously the stepdad. Yep. That's the disapproving mother.
Yep.
The kids really love him. He's going to try to pick him up. She's going to be upset. The stepdad probably is either a dickbag or he's going to kind of be in Jonathan Cloud's corner, but like it's going to be distinctly one or the other.
Always.
And the first line that he has is like, I think his job's pretty important. He's really cool.
You're, and you're like, oh, okay. Oh, so that's this guy.
Stepdad's cool. The mom's the villain.
Just completely by the numbers. Really quickly here in the chat, we have Carl Jean-Baptiste. First of all, your name is sick. Second of all, he says, what's up, guys? It's my first time here. Cheers. Well, after 4 years and 200 episodes, it's always exciting to have new people join us. So thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, Carl. Appreciate good it. To see you. Good to see you here hanging out with us. This is going to be a fun one. I love when we get to do movies like this.
Me too.
It really is kind of the sweet spot.
It is, and especially if we like it, which we totally did.
Yeah, but even if we dislike it, like Predator 2 is one of my favorite episodes. Yeah,
that's a really bad one.
Because like, there's something about these 90s action movies. I almost think that we should lean more into these than like...
If we can continue to find movies like this that are that good, I'm so in.
Yeah.
Like anytime that we have a week where we don't have a new release coming out and we kind of try to reach for something that's like kind of adjacent... We should just do a movie like this.
Right.
It'd be perfect.
Yeah. No, fuck the mechanic. Let's
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To all you guys, it's just the mechanic. So for me, it's tough because I do want to just say Powers Booth is the best part of this movie, but it's too easy. It's
base level.
Yeah, exactly. This is thesis statement.
Base level, Mac.
I think that this movie was, it came out in 95, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's 4 years ahead of its time. I know it seems weird.
Interesting.
But I think this movie came out in 99 or 2000.
Yeah.
It would have been received, and it has to be a different lead.
Yeah.
It has to be. But I think that it came out too early, and I think the reason why is it's too close to when Die Hard came out.
Yeah, it's the same year as Die Hard 3.
Exactly. And so people are like, all right, well, if I'm going to watch one movie this summer, it's going to be Sudden Death or Die Hard 3. I'm going Die Hard 3, right? Yeah. The other thing is that this movie is oddly dark for a 90s movie.
Yeah.
They kill a child in the first few minutes. They kill an old woman and her husband that are completely innocent. They kill innocent people regularly throughout the movie. The villain actually says he's going to execute people at a certain time if things are not happening, and he does it, which is something that almost never happens in these movies.
Yeah.
There's always like something else that happens or blah, blah, blah. So I feel that this movie is oddly dark for the mid-90s. And I think that if it came out a few years later, farther away from Die Hard 3, maybe they pick an off year between Lethal Weapon and Die Hard installments, this movie would have been much more successful.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I also think the sort of idea of this genre, where it was at the time, you know, because like Speed 2, I think, is the next year, I want to say. Cruise Control, I think, is like 96. Like, I just think that audiences in general at this point were getting pretty tired of this. You know, movies changed a lot post 9/11. We've talked about this before.
Yeah,
action movies especially. Everything became kind of a war movie and very self-serious. Mm-hmm. It's like generally people didn't really want this genre again until more like the 2010s.
Yeah.
Like Olympus Working, you know, those movies that we always talk about, like your Equalizers and your Takens, mm-hmm. like all that whole entire thing, we had to wait a while before audiences really wanted that genre. The 2000s, the mid-2000s, and even the late 90s to some degree, audiences felt like they were too smart, I think.
Yeah, there was a lot of really bad war movies and a lot of like really like cool, sexy action movies that were trying to be something else, whereas these movies were trying to just be hardcore.
Because I guess I remember like all those movies that came out when we were about 10 years old. You remember movies like Mercury Rising?
Oh, of course I do.
You know, and like
Baldwin.
Yeah, and they just, I think they just in general weren't very memorable. They all felt like they were kind of like, we're just regurgitating the same ideas.
100%.
And a lot of the actors that were in those movies. It's like somehow we had to get into the next era of movie making before audiences wanted to see simple movies again.
And different stars, right? It was like instead of the Willises and the Fords and the Gibsons, they became XYZ, whoever you want to pick for the mid-2000s.
And the weird thing is, too, that a lot of the guys now who are like, you're like A-list movie stars, guys who we love to watch and we'll just like see in anything.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to make a movie like this, it almost feels beneath them, right? Like, it's, you don't get a whole, like, The Rock made Skyscraper, right?
Right.
Skyscraper is, like, this kind of movie.
100%.
You know? And you don't get very many movie stars that are willing to do that. If Ryan Gosling tried to make a Sudden Death, I'd be like, what?
Yeah. Be sick.
I mean, it'd be awesome, but I'd be like, what the hell is this?
Right.
You know, Chadwick Boseman comes out and makes a Sudden Death. You're like, what? Like,
why are you... What's happening?
Yeah, you know, Jamie Foxx does Sleepless, and we're just like, I don't care. I'm not going to watch that.
I don't even know what that movie is.
He's a cop from a couple of years ago. Right, it's like a thriller.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
So we got a few things in here. Carl Jean-Baptiste saying, Powers Booth is so underrated. I couldn't agree more. I think he's one of the most underrated actors, period.
Yeah.
He's incredible. We got Denuncio here is a great one. He says, this Sudden Death is a better Die Hard movie than any Die Hard film except the first.
Oh, interesting.
Which I actually... I don't know if I disagree. I do love Die Hard with a Vengeance so much.
Three is really good.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's got a
really good
villain, and he's sweet in it. I think three is better. But I think this is definitely better than any of the other three Die Hard movies, and I think this is... I think this movie like legitimately deserves a lot more attention than it gets. It's just... He's just such a bad actor.
He is.
Problem.
He really is. But he still is tolerable, I guess.
Yeah, he's entertaining.
Yeah.
But even like... When he's in the kitchen, you know, he like walks in the kitchen and like my internal monologue that I'm hearing when he's in the kitchen, he's like, oh my God, there are so many dangerous things in this kitchen. Oh, these plates are so hot. Oh, look at these knives.
The
kitchen, it's so dangerous.
The kitchen fight was hilarious.
Oh, what accent that is.
Everything was on still. Yeah. Everything was still on.
Oh, fryer, these fryers are so dangerous. Fryer, let me burn your hand.
He doesn't sound anything like that. We have here from Jarvie, Richard Eric Jarvie says, Sudden Death is almost a classic action movie if not for the abrupt ending. They could have milked it with a Con Air-ish ending, but missed the opportunity and it ended too fast.
Oh, interesting. You think that like when the kid gets kidnapped, you could have gone 20 more minutes?
It's weird because the movie's too long already. Yeah. The movie's an hour and 50 plus, right?
Yeah.
So it feels like maybe they should have just cleaned up something in the middle to make the ending a little bit less abrupt, because the ending is very odd.
We get into the meat of the movie so fast that like, you know, like really the operation starts, you know, within 20 minutes.
Do you need to see the girl die at the beginning? Does that need to happen?
No.
Right?
Not at all. Him being you just don't need any of that. Like,
no.
Like it's his and I think it's just because he's a bad actor.
He's not damaged or anything.
I mean, look, he's so hard to watch that when the movie starts and he's like there in this firefighter's uniform, I felt like it was an SNL sketch.
Yeah.
I felt like you see him in a firefighter's uniform.
When he comes out in the hockey goalie thing,
oh my God,
and no one notices that there's just a different person in like in the world, like in the finals, the Stanley Cup finals, someone else just comes out as your goalie. You're like, get in there.
Well, because the whole... So we stopped the movie relatively early.
Oh, yeah.
This is interesting, actually. And we're going to get to thesis statement in a second.
Or those fist of you guys, pump in a second.
Yeah, those of you who have watched a lot of episodes of this show, you probably kind of know where I'm going to go with this. But, you know, we paused the movie early because it was like... And it's funny, the knife never mattered, right?
Yeah, the knife did never matter, I don't think.
So at one point, they're in the kitchen, and he sees the big knife, and he like throws it up, and it comes down and like chops an onion or something. And Drew's like, that knife's going to matter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, pause this. I was like, it's so interesting, you know, at this point, when you watch formulaic movies, you notice stuff like that, the stamp on the hand.
Yep.
And you're like, okay, any detail that you're taking time to show me early, this is going to matter later. There has to be a reason that this is happening, otherwise you wouldn't put it in the script, because why is it in the
script? Wouldn't take the 20 to 30 seconds of your audience's attention and focus it on the stamp over and over and over.
Because people don't realize it, but when you're editing a movie, you're cutting 10 seconds here, mm-hmm. 15 seconds here, you're cutting a full scene. Sometimes, a lot of the time, it's just the insert of the stamp on the hand is a shot that gets cut there, unless you need it, right?
Yeah.
And so we were like, you know, it's so interesting when you watch these movies to be like, he has the line with the guy in the locker room about hockey and that he used to play.
He used to be an amateur goalie. We were like, that's going to come up.
And we were like, how are they going to get him on the ice playing hockey? Because that obviously has to happen now.
Yeah.
You know, like, but like, you know, it's coming because it gets brought up early in the movie. And we were both just like, that's really going to happen? They're actually going to... How the fuck are they going to get him in a hockey uniform?
And it's one of those things where we were talking. It's like, if you watch as many movies as we do, and probably as many movies, excuse me, as you guys do, you sit there and you start to really notice these things. You notice the moments that the director, the editor take to focus on one thing that should be brought up again later. Whereas if you're the person that watches one movie a month, 12 movies a year in theaters, which is still a decent amount.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably more like one every 2 months. You're the type of person that doesn't even think about it. You're just rolling through the movie. You're like, oh, that's an interesting thing. And that's how they get you as a writer, as a director. When that comes back around, you're like, wow, I remember that.
I didn't even call see that coming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's just an interesting thing that I think now us as an audience, we've kind of evolved past that. You really have to pull a curveball to surprise your audience.
You have to be pretty subtle, yeah. But anyhow, that's gonna wrap up thesis statement. So we are gonna get into fist pump moment in 1 second, but I just because I remembered this, and I, you know, we talked about John Wick and we talked about the whiskey, but on AMA we haven't gotten to tell this story.
Oh yet,
and
yeah,
I think it's a pretty important one.
This is a good one.
There's also a good John Claude story we're gonna tell later in the show.
Oh.
He said action.
So a little while back, like about a month ago, on one of our streams that we do, Drew and I stream four times a week on Action Industries for about an hour each time.
Yeah.
I did an illegal stream while I was driving. It was a bad decision.
It sounded like it did well, though.
It did well. It was mostly streaming from the dashboard of my car. The phone position kept changing. It was a disaster.
But I hit two children.
Yeah. But the point was, on that stream, I was talking a little bit about Tom Petty, because he's my favorite artist of all time. And I was saying to the people on the stream that Tom Petty is somebody who I've always wanted a Tom Petty tour shirt, like a classic one, like an old school one. I'd always been looking for this era, late 70s, early 80s, because Petty like debuts in the mid-70s. And by the time he got really famous again in the late 80s and early 90s, the shirts are all horrible. They're all like really ugly. And so I was pointing out that there were these really, really cool shirts from the Hard Promises tour, which is from 1981. There was this one shirt in particular that I had seen at like a vintage store in Venice, and it was really expensive. And the guy was like, you should just get it, man. You know, these are rare. And I talked about it on the stream, and Jake Iacovetta and Jeremiah Morris and a handful of other people in the Action Army.
They're spearheaded.
Okay, it sounds like we got Kernsey on the line, so I'll give me 1 second here, Kernsey. Yep. You can even put Kernsey through if you want. He can just be on while we finish the story, because you know he was in New York as well. They surprised me and they bought the shirt.
Yeah.
And they gave it to me in New York City as a gift, and I freaked out. It was the coolest thing that's ever happened.
It was crazy. I mean, Jake reached out to me and he's like, hey, we got the shirt. We're wondering what we want to do. Should we send it to you guys in the studio? Should we bring it to New York? Like, what's the best way to surprise Ben? And I was like, well, dude, you just got to bring it to New York. I mean, that's the way to do it. Action Live, you know, everyone's going to be there in the Army. And these shirts are not cheap by any means. They're actually like
extraordinarily expensive.
Extraordinarily more and expensive, almost offensively.
More expensive than my suit.
More expensive than both of our suits.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's awesome. I saw it again last night when I was over at your place when we were doing our stream. And the thing's older than we are.
It's almost 40 years old.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
It was such a sweet gift, and you guys are the coolest ever. So just wanted to give a shout, because I really appreciate the fans that support us and are a part of the Army, and especially the generals in the Action Army, both of which Jeremiah and Jake are.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing. So check out patreon.com/teamaction if you want to, you know, join that brotherhood. And a whole lot of brotherhood.
A whole lot of brotherhood.
Is that Kernsey on the line?
We got him on the line.
Right, it is. Kerns, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing amazing. You're finally doing Sun Death, despite telling me for 4 years you would never do it.
We have moved this around on the schedule more than any movie that we've even discussed to come on the show. But thank you. Honestly, thank you for your persistence, your perseverance, because we loved it. We had a really good time.
You're an integral piece of the Action family, Kearns, and you have shown us something beautiful.
So Ben, what is a fist pump moment?
A fist pump moment is that moment something happens in the movie. You look around, you're like, are you seeing this right now? This is so sweet! God, this is awesome! Can be anything, can be a line, can be a look between father and son, can be the opening music, can be a headshot, literally anything.
Yep.
It's that moment in the movie that just like convinces you you're doing something awesome with your life by watching this movie.
100%. And we might as well start off with the man of the hour, Kearns. What is your fist pump? And then I want to hear your thesis, because I know you have the whole thing lined up.
Oh yeah, I've had all this lined
up. I've been thinking about this for years.
You guys. So fist bump to me, I think it needs to come early enough into the movie to where like, oh my god, I want to spend the next hour and a half watching this. So for me, my fist bump, it's the fight with the penguin mascot. It's completely crazy and stupid, but it lets you know the movie you're about to watch, and it's pretty awesome, especially how it ends, where he just knocks her into, like, I don't know, the weird conveyor belt in the kitchen and dumps her. It's sweet. I literally fist pumped last night when I was watching it. And I was alone.
Ben and I were actually laughing out loud during that fight. Not only was it like a hilarious reenactment of the fight from Spy in the kitchen, but also that woman in that suit literally picks up and body slams Jean-Claude and drags him across the counter in a penguin suit.
We were like, God, she is so strong. Or Jean-Claude is incredibly weak. I'm not sure which it is.
It's a gnarly fight. Like the hand in the fryer is pretty intense, and then like we kept like leaning over each other, like, God, this movie's pretty gruesome.
Pretty gruesome, yeah. The fryer. I'm telling you, Kearns, every time he'd like look at something else in the kitchen, be like, oh, this fryer is so hot, it's still on. You know? Let me use it. These knives are so sharp. That was just my inner monologue. That's why I just kept saying that shit to myself this morning. All right, so that's your fist bump moment. I'm on board with you, buddy.
100%.
What do you got for your thesis?
Well, my thesis is not tracking anyway, but it's that Sudden Death is the most underrated 90s action film. You guys know, I'm like the only person I think out of all your fandom who has been talking about this movie. No one else really brings it up. I never see it on any action movie list. And it needs to be seen because it is pure 90s action movie gold.
I think that if we were going to do the greatest villains of all time list, let's say we did like our top 100.
Yeah.
I know that Foss would make it in there.
Oh, 100%.
Because I'm a huge fan of his already. And I think honestly on rewatch and thinking about it, that would be one of our sweet, like, the action guys have this like strong opinion about this character from this like otherwise just okay movie. But he's so good that it's like worth putting on the list for that reason.
Maybe we should do a villains discussion on the action guys today.
Seems like a good
idea. That could be kind of cool.
Foss is
he's
up there.
So good.
He's the greatest villain of all time.
Of all time. it's strong. I mean, it's hard for me to just say something that definitive and completely agree with you, but I don't disagree. It is one of those movies that the only thing that it's actually missing is gratuitous nudity, but you do see a lot of man ass.
You do. There's a lot of male nudity in the film, which is funny.
What's that?
I said it's true. There is a lot of. We don't see any Van Damme ass, though.
No. He also doesn't do the splits. I kept expecting him to do the splits in the kitchen.
How is he? I thought he was going to do the splits when he was playing goalie.
Right.
Well, that's what I love about this movie, and I'm a huge Van Damme fan, and something I love about him is that he usually, his fighting style is to the character he's playing, and he knew that a firefighter would not be able to do all the splits and kicks, so he doesn't do it. I respect that he could have had him do them, but then it's like, why would a firefighter be doing splits? How would he know this?
How do you feel about our general disdain for Jean-Claude's acting?
I'm fine. Look, I love
like, I'm a realist,
Damme,
man.
But it's one of those things where it's like, I get he's not a good actor, but I still love him. I get he's never going to be high tier for anyone. Look, I also walk around and I go, oh my God, look, there's a knife and there's a fire. What am I going to do with this? Yeah. I'm fighting the penguin now. Oh my God. There needs to be a version of this movie released on Blu-ray with Van Damme's like inner monologue
that
you can play along. That would be amazing.
He has a pretty good sense of humor about himself, so I wonder if he would do like a commentary track.
Yeah, it seems like he does now. What is your fist pump, Ben?
I think it's probably, honestly, just the, when you... I think it's yours, too. The first time you see Powers Booth.
God damn it, it is.
Because 100%. Because the cut up to Powers Booth, it's also... Okay, you know what? Because he has so many good lines, I can burn the best line as my fist bump.
Okay, really, that's fair.
Like, the first time you see his face, it's pretty incredible.
He's so handsome.
He's so handsome.
He's striking, and he's evil.
His delivery
is just incredible.
So here, I'm going to see if I can... I'm going to do this one. So, he's like, he talks to the vice president. The guy's like, he's like, it's okay, it's okay. And Foss, Powers Booth, looks at him and he goes, I know what you're thinking. Evaluate the situation, calculate potential losses, and take appropriate action. Well, let me do that for you. Situation is hopeless. Losses would be unacceptable. So the appropriate action is for you to do nothing and keep your fucking mouth shut.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh! Oh, God, this guy's good. He's so ruthless.
We were like, these lines are written so perfectly. Like, literally, all the good writing went into just Foss.
Yeah, and literally, he feels like that whole delivery when it's happening in the movie, as an action movie fan, I was like, oh, sweet. This writing is one step ahead of me.
Yeah.
I was legitimately, we were
both like, I'm in.
I'm totally in. Like, I'm sold on this guy. And, I mean, he's also, it's funny, because is Powers Booth handsome or is he striking?
Striking.
He's not actually handsome, right?
I mean, he's kind of handsome.
Is he handsome?
Definitely striking.
Kearns, is he handsome?
Kearns, you're the expert here.
He is strikingly handsome.
Okay.
Love a girl.
We might as well get your favorite line while you're still on the phone, Kearns. What is your favorite line in the movie? I hope you don't steal mine.
Okay, so my favorite line, it's Powers Booth line, because of course it is.
Of course it is.
It's right after he's killed one of the, I guess, Secret Service men or whatever. The vice president's giving that spiel where he's like, oh, he has a wife, he has kids. And Powers Booth, like a cocky dick, just goes, I'll send a card.
Yes!
Like, he just,
the line is, that agent's name was Eddie Killeen. He has a 5-year-old boy and a 3-year-old little girl, and his wife's pregnant. Booth goes, I'll send a card.
I'll send a card.
No, he doesn't. He literally 18. He's like, I'll send a card. Oh, like, okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah, it's so good. Kearns, thanks so much for calling in, man. Where can the people find you online? I know that you do a lot of stuff, including running our Twitter, which you're doing a fantastic job at. We'll give you a nice long shout out at the end as we've been doing the Action Industry shout out. But where can the people find you and what you're doing?
Well, thank you guys for really calling first, but you guys can find me at @Matthew on Twitter, and my work is on the YouTube channel Take Three Productions. Check out my video series. I look at movies like Sunday Death, movies that only people like me enjoy, but I'll let you know why I enjoy them. And I have not done a Van Damme movie yet, but you guys just made me realize I need to cover one. So maybe I'll do that this month.
Yeah, Kearns, just because you kind of you broke up a little bit there, I want to make sure the people listening totally got it. Kearns, he does, he has a YouTube channel called Take Three Productions, and his Twitter is Kearns_Matthew. That's KEARNS_Matthew. Check that out. Kearns, he's the best. You rock, man. Thanks for making us watch this movie.
All right, thank you guys for finally covering it.
You got it, brother. We salute you. We'll talk to you soon. See you, pal.
See ya.
All right, so what's your fist pump?
So my fist pump moment, well, you took it.
It's the line.
We did it. Yeah, it's a collaborative one. I mean, between the first time you see Powers and then that line, it's I was so in. I was so stoked.
Like the pan up to his face when you first see him.
He's like in a tuxedo. I will say it was a weird fist, because I've had these a handful of times on the show. But when the little girl died, you were like, wow, that's intense. But then when they killed the old lady, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
This movie is different than what I expected. So it was like a half fist pump because a sweet old woman died who was just trying to be sweet and old.
I know.
Gave him Fig Newtons.
And that guy never has to pay.
Yeah, he just doesn't. He's fine. He gets away.
It's terrible. That's
not okay. But that was my other kind of like, all right, I'm in. This movie is going to be way like more intense than I ever thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
So yeah. That is my fist bump moment.
Sweet. All right, so we're going to continue moving through the show into the next part of the show. That's going to be star profiles. So we're going to talk about these guys' careers, where they were. Interestingly enough, you know, this is Jean-Claude. I would say it's Jean-Claude's heyday. I think it is.
Yeah.
I think this is sort of the tail end of his heyday, it feels like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because by the late 90s, he was making, like, Double Team and Knock Off. Like, less successful movies.
Yeah, these movies were still pretty relevant. Street Fighter was, like, a big deal.
So, like, this is, like, that's, like, a huge, you know, he's, like, so the year before he makes Street Fighter in 94, that was, like, a big deal, because obviously it was, like, the biggest video game at the time. Mortal Kombat being the other, which came out the next year, I believe, 2 years later. Time Cop, 94, huge, very famous. By the way, I have to make sure you watch some of Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
Oh, I know. Eric Frederick was talking about it in the chat today.
It's so good. In fact, hey, Ryan, can you pull up...
Hey.
That's Ryan Nielsen in the booth. Can you pull up Jean-Claude Van Johnson opening monologue? I'll bet you it's on YouTube, and it's sweet. Like, him waking up and, like, his little monologue that he gives. I wonder if it's the thing I remember, because you'll get a good laugh out of it.
Absolutely.
I have no idea what you're talking about, so I'm excited.
It's Van Johnson or...
Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
Yeah, Hard Target being the other one in 93. So, you know, I mean, he had Kickboxer and Bloodsport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Universal Soldier is later than this.
I couldn't tell you, honestly.
And then, you know, there's like Lionheart, and there's a few others. Yeah, this is totally it. Okay, before we get to Powers, let's play this.
Okay.
Oh, gosh.
It's him, right?
Yeah. The premise of this was, well, I'll explain in a second, but this was like one of those pilots that they made the pilot, and then they posted it on Amazon to see if it would get picked up, like if fans liked it enough.
Right.
It's such a ridiculous. He had to have had a sense of humor of himself to make it.
I would hope so. Something that we didn't experience meeting him.
No,
but
none of the times.
This is how you know you've made it.
Where is his monologue? You should start talking.
Is he supposed to start talking?
I thought so. How long is this? I wonder if he does.
This is a. We got 20 seconds left.
Oh no, so this is just this routine.
He's morning routine.
Popping, which also is pretty damn entertaining.
I think it's legitimately, I think it's right after that. If you can find opening monologue, maybe.
Jean-Claude Van Johnson opening monologue.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of it, we got Powers Booth, who was a guy that really never, he just really never tracked. No matter how great he was in, you know, Tombstone, no matter how great he, what was it, what was his name? Something Bill?
Curly Bill.
Yeah, Curly Bill. I mean, that's probably, I'll bet you that's his most famous role. Yeah, and then MacGruber, of course, and obviously Deadwood was a big thing for him, but he did Mutant Species in 94, Blue Sky in 94, and Tombstone in 93. So, you know, a guy that actually has been working a lot through his entire career. He just never had those really huge moments. And the ones that were the biggest in Tombstone and in Deadwood, they just, I don't know, they just didn't ever catapult him to that next level. He should have been a great villain for his entire career.
Yeah,
I mean, he really should have.
You know, rest in peace, Powers Booth.
Yeah,
I mean, he's in movies, right? So he's got the role in Sin City. We remember.
Yeah, he's the dad, right?
Yeah,
of the shitty guy.
Obviously, in what's it called? In Blue Sky was a big movie. Jessica Lange won the Oscar for that one, so people saw that. You know, that mattered. Yeah, he's in Frailty. That's a movie people like a lot. He doesn't have a big role in it, but you know, he's in Frailty. But yeah, a lot of the stuff that he's in, right? He's in He's like in all these movies that you've heard of, but it's like he's not the reason you remember the movies. It does feel like Tombstone is probably the movie that he is most remembered for at this point.
Curly Bill.
Red Dawn. He's in Red Dawn, I guess.
Do we have it here, Ryan, or no?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, okay.
This is 6 minutes.
I'll tell you if it's what I'm...
Je l'ai pas encore délivré.
This is not it.
Not it.
That's in French.
It's in French. Okay, so well, Howard Baldwin, the chairman of the Pittsburgh Penguins, was one of the film's backers, obviously. He had a 2-year deal with Universal. Baldwin wanted to use footage from the October 1st game opener between Pittsburgh and Chicago, but the game was delayed due to a lockout. He arranged an exhibition game, but the players from Pittsburgh and Chicago apparently did not display the correct intensity that they needed in Sudden Death. I love how much this game does not matter in the actual movie.
But you're supposed to like...
But you're supposed to care.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, they're down one, now they're up one, they're tied again. So they arranged another game involving players from the Johnston Chiefs and Wheeling Thunderbirds of the East Hockey League. Crowd shots were done over one night using between 2,000 and 3,000 extras, plus cardboard cutouts to make the stadium seem like 17,000 people. It was filmed in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where it's set, and Middleton, New York. It took 98 days of filming, which is hilarious to me. Parts were filmed and then unopened and now closed in the Veteran Hospital. Okay. This is a Rob Cohen moment and a half. The final helicopter crash was filmed with a 400-foot crane that could pick up and lower the helicopter into the arena. 9 cameras recorded the event, which was filmed several times, and hundreds of emergency vehicles were on standby in case of an accident. Talk about the biggest waste of money ever.
That ending is so preposterous. It kept going, and I kept being like, what is happening in the seconds? Like, the first he shoots the guys and they die and they're perfect shots. He kills them
straight
both.
Through the floor, kills them both.
Doesn't blow up the helicopter though.
Nope.
Powers notices that the helicopter is slowly flipping over. It's flipping backwards. The thing doesn't like veer and spin off. It like pretty perfectly
don't do that.
Aligns.
Yep.
Powers like reaches for the control.
He's trying.
He like gets them, I think, to stabilize it as it's in like tail dive
just
backwards.
Just like a backwards slow fall down.
And in slow-mo. And they keep showing Powers' face. He's like, in his ridiculous wig and mustache.
I love it. Which also is like the only reason you could tell it was him was because of the stamp on his hand.
Why
do you let your daughter go after this happened? Anyway. That ending was so obscene, so absurd, and then he dies.
And then it blows up.
And then it blows up and he's dead.
Yeah.
And that's how the movie ends, essentially. Spoiler alert. It was directed by Peter Hyams.
Mm-hmm.
He was known for directing Capricorn 1, the 1981 science fiction thriller, Outland, and the 1984 science film 2010, The Year We Make Contact, a sequel to 2001, A Space Odyssey. And, of course, Running Scared, really great one. The comic book adaptation of Time Cop and horror films The Relic and End of Days with Schwarzenegger.
I've heard of a lot of these movies.
Yeah,
Time Cop, Relic, and End of Days are all like relatively well known.
Uh-huh.
Capricorn 1 I only know of only
because of Schmo.
Because it was asked once in a match that Sam and Drew got.
What the fuck?
80s.
They
outlined the plot in one of the actors and Sam was like, Capricorn 1, and Drew was like, of course. And
of
I was like,
course.
Like, oh my God.
The unequivocal. So critical and box office, this movie, the budget we actually do not have here, but it made $20 million domestic, an additional $44 million worldwide. And if you want to read through the rest of those, I can find the budget here.
For a total gross of $64.35 million. Opened number 8. At $4.78 million, that's a pretty strong indicator of how much people wanted this movie to work or gave a shit.
Eighth with a Jean-Claude movie in the mid-90s.
This is his next movie after Street Fighter.
Yeah,
I mean, Street Fighter was a bad movie, but like it was a big deal.
Yeah, it cost $35 million to make, $30 million spent on the crane.
Ridiculous.
It's got a 5.8 on IMDb, a 51% on the tomato meter, and a 39% by the audience. So Kern's just really swinging for the fences there.
Kern's really bringing that 35 up to 39 as one of the 23 people that's ever rated this film online. All right, what's your favorite line?
So my favorite line, it has to be a Powers Booth line because every single one is a Powers Booth line. And it's the line that he says, I believe, to the president as well. But it's, there's enough bombs in this building to... What is it?
He says there's enough explosive in this building to
stop all the clocks in the hemisphere. Yeah. Which I'm like, how does that make sense? Why does the explosion stop the? I'm in.
There are so many good ones. I wish that I could find the line that he has about the wine. He like describes the wine.
Oh, it's so. And he's just like sipping red wine while he's killing people. So good.
Yeah, it's incredible. He just has so many good lines. Like the entire movie is just a series of him saying awesome shit. I mean, Mrs. Baldwin, I don't think anyone with manicured fingernails wearing a $10,000 wristwatch is planning on blowing himself up. Yeah. $15,000 wristwatch. Yes.
And then he throws it away at the end of the movie to like hide who he is, to conceal it, instead of just wearing a jacket.
The mayor has decided not to run for re-election after he kills him. Just everything he says is incredible. Oh, God.
Okay. So moving on to AMA question. We do a contest every weekend. And by we, I mean Richard Eric Jarvie, who runs our Instagram. He gets a little bit of help there from James Spence. And, of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Josh Ryan. Check out at Josh Ryan Sports if you guys haven't already. He's a great dude. He's a reporter, I believe, up in Canada. Like a sportscaster?
Is it Canada? Yeah, I mean, he definitely is a broadcaster. I'm not sure if it's Canada, but yeah, Josh has been a friend, a supporter for a long time, and he has really, really great questions.
Really great questions. Also, a strikingly handsome man. He says, when did American audiences lose interest in any action stars playing Americans that clearly weren't American? Jerry B is kind of the only one exception now, right? Because even Statham always has his accent.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting, right? Like Jackman doesn't really... God, why hasn't Jackman done a bad action movie?
Why hasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he has. Like, Van Helsing and movies like that.
Yeah, that movie's real good.
Why doesn't he just do, like, a sweet one?
If I should just go on a Jerry B run?
Yeah.
Now that he's done doing the show tour?
Pelvic thrusts abound. Such a talent.
I don't really know how to answer this question. Do you want to field it? You got an idea?
I think it's an interesting question. My guess would be around the time of 9/11. It would probably be there's an increased sense of like patriotism and mm-hmm. this feeling of like America being so much more prominent and significant in the things you're willing to spend money on in the era post 9/11, which is I think why so many of those movie stars leaned into these war films where you didn't really have like a lot of these war films where the importance of what was going on was like buoyed by patriotism or heroism in this way. Like you didn't have to deal with real characters living today very often, living situations you could relate to. It was something completely, you know, not relatable and then very often just like so American.
Yeah, and I also think that there's the thing where audiences evolve, like every couple decades, they like all of a sudden are not pleased by Humphrey Bogart talking like this. That's not how real people talk. It's not acting.
Right.
You know, so like I go back and I watch Casablanca and I'm like, oh, this is a good movie, but Humphrey Bogart's not a very good actor or very handsome or anything, you know?
Yeah, right.
I think it might have been a part of that around the same time. I think audiences were just like, all right, if you're going to do it, I need to believe it.
Yeah, right.
You know, and like I think it's the same thing why we have issues with like Charlie Hunnam in Pacific Rim is just. People want, we're American, so we know what Americans sound like. So if you're going to do it right.
It's distracting and it's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Jerry B is kind of the one exception now. I mean, I think it's because Jerry B feels, he like feels American.
He's transcended nationality. Yeah, I know. He does like feel American.
Yeah.
Brian, somehow. What are you watching up there?
Yeah,
that was an ad for what I think is a Jean-Claude Van Damme monologue, and it looked like it was a yoga ad.
I looked up, and it was
immediately panned out.
A lot of butts.
Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
So, Josh, I hope that answers your question. Let us know what you think. Tweet at us something you do regularly, but tweet us and let us know what you think the reason is, and let us know in the chat, guys.
I think we are kind of nearing the end of the show here
in just a
few minutes. There are three action movie categories, Drew. Totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. Which category do you think this film fits into?
Dead heroes make the best funerals. You know, there was a moment for a little bit there where I wanted to go ridiculously legitimate. I want to put it in that category, but it's just not. And when Jean-Claude comes out and plays goalie, that's when they lose me. That is 100%. I'm like, what?
When Jean-Claude starts walking at the beginning of the film and doesn't talk, that was totally ridiculous for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's any way around it. I'd love to see the arguments if you guys have one, but there's just no way this movie is anything but totally ridiculous.
He like starts walking, and I literally hear like these boots are made for walking playing. It's like so preposterous.
These boots are made for walking, but it's the French version. Ridiculously legit, says D'Annunzio, because of Powers.
Yeah,
I agree that Powers almost gets it there.
Because, I mean, he does the thing that we always say.
Yeah.
He does the thing we always say, where it almost roots the movie enough that it feels like it works.
But then his death in his wig and mustache are so... Also, his mustache is hilarious, because it's like, you should have just had one and shaved it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. There's only one last thing left to talk about this week, and it's called...
The Pitch! Sick. That was a good one.
That was cool.
God, there's a lot of generals.
There's a ton of generals.
I love it.
The Pitch next week is a grotesquely violent film.
It isn't... They were raped 50 times.
I haven't seen this movie since 2009,
maybe? I would love to watch this movie with you.
I hope we get to watch it together.
Yeah, guys, we're going to do Rambo 08.
Rambo 08. This is the... this is in the period of time when Stallone got, like... He got, like... older gentleman jacked, we'll call it, where you start to where the kind of striations in your body that you see are like you have like 8 abs instead of 6.
Yep,
they're kind of like small and long and thin.
The HGH has just been compounding in your system for decades.
Never proven.
Not taken to court a lot.
No, I mean this movie is sweet. I really, really, really am excited to talk about
it. It is insanely violent.
It's so violent,
and I love the bow and arrow. It's so good.
I haven't seen it in a long time. Isn't the girl in this movie the wife in Dexter? Isn't that who it is? The blonde?
Oh, is it? It might be.
I'll look it up.
I think it is.
And the guy?
Yes, it is. It is 100%. I can't remember her name.
Yeah, me
Julie
neither.
Benz?
Yep, Julie Benz.
Julie Benz, 100%,
yeah. Yep.
And the guy who's like the other reporter guy who's like with her, he's like, don't do it, Julie. He's like such a shit weasel, right?
Total shit weasel. That's the guy that he says, you were raped 50 times. That's my favorite line. It's so aggressive.
It's so hilariously aggressive, and you can't understand a word he says.
Oh, man, am I excited to watch this movie.
Oh, so guys, that's what we're doing next week. Go and watch it. We will be watching it probably together on Sunday, and we got some generals to shout out.
So, guys, I'm going to go backwards this time.
Okay, I love it.
Sari Laminmaki, AJ Lancaster, Tamer Buddha, Kyle Hilbert, Jeremiah Morris, Nick Gilmore, Mac Ryan, Kelsey Kirkland, Kyle Grandinetti, Jake Iacovetta, John Patterson, John Getz, Billy Belford, Paul D'Annunzio, Andrew Hayes.
Holy crap!
It's a lot of generals in the army, guys. You guys make up the family that is Action Industries.
We salute you.
We salute you all. Thank you all for your support.
And for these lovely
gifts
and the shirt.
Generally amazing.
Everything.
We're excited to be back next week talking Rambo. Tune in to the Action Guys this week. It sounds like we're going to do some kind of a villains episode. That'll be sweet.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun.
Maybe we'll go at lunch and just make that list.
Yeah, I think we should.
Seems like a fun time.
Definitely.
All right, guys. Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.